of what I want to do now. And I want to take a moment now to address the national crisis that we find ourselves in, whether one calls it gender-based violence or violence against women or a violent men problem. We've all become aware this week that this is something bigger than we have admitted thus far and something that we cannot ignore any longer. And so to all the ladies that are sitting here today, I want to say to you that we see you, that we feel your pain, and that we share your outrage. And we want to take a moment now to address it. And so for the most part, I'm going to address the men here today. But at the same time, I'm going to ask Kaz to come and join me. But as I address the men here, I will be doing that in a way that I want to ask us as men to come and take responsibility for the change that needs to take place in order for the ladies around us, our wives, our children, our friends, the ladies in this community to begin to feel safe. And maybe you think that's a massive exaggeration, but hopefully by the end of what we share now, you're going to understand that it's not an exaggeration. And so, Kaz, why don't you come up? And I'm going to ask Kaz just to team with me as we do this. And as we do it, I'm asking Kaz to come in and just to share with us and get us up to speed with some of what's been happening in the country. If you've been living in a hole, which is very easy in Somerset West, you might have missed some of what's going on in the nation. So, Kaz.
Thanks. 2 weeks ago on Saturday, a girl went to deliver a parcel to the post office in Cape Town. She was a first-year student at UCT. She was vibrant, she was outspoken. She had a big sense of humor. She was playful and she could dance. And she was an ace on the saxophone, her brother said. But Uyanene never returned from the post office. By the Wednesday, everyone was frantic. Her resmates and her fellow students held a prayer vigil at UCT. Where was Uyanene? Finally, last Sunday, a man, a monster, a charming, friendly post office employee, admitted to raping and murdering this young girl. Upon his arrest, he complained that this child gave me a hard time. She took a long time to die. At her funeral yesterday, Uyanene's mom's words were, "I'm sorry that I warned you about all the other places, but not the post office. I'm sorry I was not there to fight for you, my girl." In the weeks since, all hell has broken loose. Or perhaps it's the opposite. Perhaps a country which once elected a rapist as a president has finally found its voice. A reported 70,000 men and women marched in Cape Town this week, and similar marches have happened on university campuses and on streets throughout the country. Schoolboys have made oaths to protect women and respect women. Schoolgirls have dressed in black. Cries for justice have rung out. Calls for the reinstatement of the death penalty, hashtags like "Am I next?" have gone viral. Am I next? I hope not. Because despite the uproar this week, a student nurse was raped when leaving the hospital. Despite the uproar this week, a Viwe Willem was found raped and stabbed to death in her bed. Despite the uproar this week, 11-year-old Tandi Mampani never returned from school. And they found her body last night. And despite the uproar this week, there are more families than we can fathom wondering where their daughters are or mourning their passing. During the last financial year, police recorded nearly 37,000 cases of gender-based violence, including rape, assault, and the murder of nearly 3,000 women in South Africa. And this doesn't take into account the amount of unreported crimes against women. There are various stats, but on a fact-checking site called Africa Check, there's a they talk about a survey done in Gauteng a few years back, in which less than 4% of the women surveyed who had been raped reported it. So if there are 37,000 cases of gender-based violence reported in the last financial year, and potentially as little as 4% are being reported, it's untenable. I've been to a police station with a friend who had been raped, and in no uncertain terms, the police urged her not to open a case. They explained to her that if she did, number one, she would have to tell her parents about it, which she didn't want to do. Number two, she would spend much of the following years dealing with it publicly. Number three, the friend who had found her after it had happened would become prime suspect, which she didn't believe that he was. She had been drugged. That same survey, where the 4% of women said they had reported the rapes, nearly 40% of the men surveyed, now this is a small sample of men, but nearly 40% of the men surveyed in that particular survey in Gauteng some years ago, nearly 40% admitted to having raped a woman. 40%. This was not a national study, it's some years old, but something is deeply, deeply messed up in a country where 4 out of 10 men in any given context can admit to having had non-consensual sex. The most recent stat of 2016 rates South Africa as having the fourth highest female interpersonal violence death rate. That's wordy, let me put it simply. SA is the fourth least safe place in the world to be a woman. And so now finally, after Uyanene and Leandre Jagels and Kwezi and Susan Roda and Winnie Rist and Karabo Mokoena and Hannah Cornelius and Reva Steenkamp and so many thousands more, the country has reached a boiling point.
So I think I've got to be honest and say that I've been fairly dismissive of this, not as an issue. I just haven't. It just hasn't struck me deeply until a little while ago. And so, for those of you that don't know, I'm a father of three girls, and this struck me a little while ago when Kaz and I were having a conversation. And it was an enlightening discussion around the different ways that she feels vulnerable on a daily basis. And we compared her framework. And so Kaz is not someone that's been raped or abused or molested or anything like that. And she's a confident woman. And we compared her framework of daily life against my framework of daily life. And I was astounded. I was astounded as to the tone of what she goes through on a daily basis. And it started to drive home for me the difference that as a man, I think I can be dismissive around this and I have taken for granted and have been ignorant around the reality that our ladies live in. And so I'm asking Kaz to come and share some of the insights around the framework for daily life that her and others are going through, as a way to help us men just get up to speed with this.
So just some examples of, for the benefit of the men, of the daily reality of women living in this country. From my perspective, I like to jog, but I won't jog if there's an incline there next to the road, because I know I can just be pulled in so easily and concealed. When I jog, I keep an eye out for doorbells and intercoms should I need to go ask for help. And I opened this question up on Facebook and I asked women, what are things that have become normal for you that shouldn't have to be because of the situation in the country in which we live? And these are some quotes from the ladies. I analyze my route every time I run or cycle, read the chances of rape. I used to love going for a jog, but I don't do that anymore. If my girls are out of my sight in a public place, my blood runs cold. I look everyone in the eye and I greet them. I walk as tall as I can in public and I stand my ground. I walk fast and purposefully. I hope that this gives me an image of not being vulnerable. I walk purposefully whenever I'm out. I try not to make eye contact with anyone for fear that if I do, it'll encourage some guy to follow me and attack me as I get into my car. I shop in malls because I feel safer there. I take my keys out of my bag before I get to my car while shopping to unlock, and I get in quickly, and then I consider the safest way to get myself and my kids in the car, being sure to lock the moment we're in. I never, ever, ever have a day when I'm worry-free about my car, my possessions, my kids, or my life. Not ever. It's normal for me to check that I'm not alone in a parking lot, that there's no one near my car, that there's no one in my car, to cautiously open my window at a boom, to be hyper-vigilant at every robot at my own gate, when I open the car door, even when inside my complex, and even when I open my front door. I cross the road if I'm walking, and there's a man, or worse, a group of men coming toward me. If there's any man on the street as I'm driving toward my home gate, I continue driving around the block until he's gone. I've rediscovered my childhood fear of the dark. When home alone, I work out quick exit strategies. I won't shower if I'm home alone unless the beams are on and the doors are all locked. When I dress up for an evening occasion, I worry whether someone will misinterpret my attire as permission to assault me. I don't go out at night at all. And I am so tired of needing to ask God to calm my fears and to protect my life and person. Why should I have to live with this constant fear of men just because I'm a woman?
So this isn't normal, and it shouldn't. This isn't normal, and we shouldn't normalize it or tolerate it, because what we tolerate we deem acceptable. And so what should we do about it? And so in a moment I want to talk to the men, but before I do that I'm asking Kaz to speak to the ladies. And before she takes over again, I'd like to apologize to the ladies in the room. There are ladies here today who, at the hand of men, have been raped in this room. You may not know who they are, but there are several. It's more than you imagine. There are ladies here today who, at the hand of men, have been sexually abused, have been physically abused, have been emotionally abused, have been degraded and demeaned, and it's totally unacceptable. And I'm deeply, deeply sorry for that. I'm also sorry that the solution and the relief that is needed is not instant. The problem is systemic, and it's going to take time to resolve. And so as Kaz comes and talks to you about what you should do about it to the ladies, I want to be cognizant and mindful that this is something that you can do in the meantime, because the solution isn't going to come like this in an instant. The solution that needs to come from men, and it's going to take time to get there. And in the interim, while the men sort themselves out, they put their big boy pants on and they start to own up to what God's called them to. In the meantime, I want to ask you guys to as best as you can, to deal with the hurts that you have, and to find God's healing hand on that. So Kaz, why don't you come and speak quickly?
So I believe it's redundant to urge women in South Africa to be cautious. I think we live cautious lives. I think we have to. We shouldn't have to, but we do have to. And so obviously, we need to continue to be cautious. I think it's also redundant to urge women in this country not to fear. As believers, of course, we are not meant to be governed by fear. Of course, we're not meant to be governed by fear. But caution is wisdom. Ignorance is not wisdom. We can't put our heads in the sand and pretend that nothing can ever happen to us. We need to be wise. We need to be cautious. Can I suggest that a better thing than telling women that they're paranoid, telling women not to be scared, telling women that nothing will happen to them, a better thing, a more constructive thing to say to us is, I'm praying for you, and then to actually do that. So to those of the ladies in this room who have suffered any form of assault, I just want to say two things to you. Number one, Satan will try to convince you that you are somehow at fault. He does it every time. Every woman that I've spoken to takes some kind of blame upon herself. You are not at fault. Please don't believe that lie. It wasn't your fault. Number two, there are avenues at your disposal for working through what has happened to you. Externally, there's Rape Crisis Helderberg, which is an organization that we support as a church. Their number will go up on the screen now. But as your church family, I want you to know that we are here to support you, and we are so wanting to walk a road of healing with you. We are so wanting to pray with you. We are so wanting to stand with you to process what it is you've been through. And so my number's also up on the screen. If you would like access to that, if you would like to speak to someone, if you would like to speak to another lady, walk a road with another lady, then please do send me a message and I will make sure that that happens.
Great. So now to the men. I want to talk to you guys. So the ladies, you can check Facebook or News24, whatever you want to do. But to the men, I want to chat to us very quickly. And I want to say that it's very easy to sit here and say, well, I'm not part of it. I'm not the problem. I'm not an issue in this. I've never raped anyone. And can I ask you not to begin to move in that direction in any kind of way? And so there's a couple of things I'm going to ask. I need to qualify and say that I understand that we've got good godly men here, but I also understand that there are men here that are behaving inappropriately in a way that's unacceptable. And we'll elaborate on that in a little bit later, and I want you to know that it's not okay. But when we come and we say, what are we going to do about this? What are we going to do to change this? Because it's so huge and it's so massive. You know, if I come and do this or if I come and make a change, is it going to do anything? Yes, it is. It absolutely is. And so if we as a community can begin to create a safe place for our women to live, we begin to let that change spread out wider. If we can begin to treat our ladies in such a way that the Bible calls us to, we begin to become a bastion of truth. We begin to become a light on a hill that people can run to. If we do that and several others do it, if we do that and multiple others do it, we begin to see change that happens more broadly than just one or two people, but in culture. It needs to start somewhere, and so we have to do something. And so to the men, number one, can we adopt a posture of humility? And so Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, count others more significant than yourselves. Right now, you're looking at yourself and you're saying, why is this my issue? I'm not involved in this. No, no, no. Can you count others more significant than yourselves in this moment? Can you count women more significant than yourselves in this moment? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Lay your lives down for her. Men, can you come and lay your lives down for the women in your life? Can you come and serve them? Can you count them more significant than yourselves? Because that's the mandate of the gospel. If you're inherently selfish and you cannot do that, then I question whether or not the love and the life of God is in you. I really do. And so let each of you not only look to his own interests, but also to the interests of others, having this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he is in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men and being found in the form, in human form, he humbled himself. And so I'm going to ask again, can we as men in this community, can we humble ourselves? And so don't, as you sit there, argue with me and say, it's not me. Don't, as you sit there, defend yourself. Don't point fingers at other people. Don't fold your arms dismissively. Humble yourselves, lean in, and listen. Please, I beg of you. Number two, can we admit that there is a problem? Can we admit that there's a problem? Can we admit that our ladies don't feel safe? And that not only our ladies, but more broadly in the rest of the country and in different places to a scale in a degree that we have got no understanding of, that there is a problem. Can we admit that there's a problem? And so number one, can we adopt a posture of humility? Number two, can we admit that there's a problem? Number three, can we recognize that this problem is not about you? I'm talking to the men, that this problem is not about you. And so there's a whole bunch of lewd posters that ladies are walking around with. And there's a whole bunch of hashtags saying men are trash. And what we're doing is we're using those to come and say, well, I'm not trash. How dare anyone call me trash? You know, not all men are trash. What a gross dress generalization. And we dismiss the issue at the sake of a generalization that's not true. And in that moment, we're making it about ourselves. But actually, you know, men may not all be trash, but it seems like men are deaf. Certainly in this country, that for a long time they've been deaf. And the point is not to come and stereotype all men, but it's in somehow, in some way, in some manner, to come and shock the world and to shock people into waking up from their slumber so that they might see that there's a problem. So when there's a hashtag that says men are trash, it's not to say that all men are trash, but it's to come and wake us from our slumber to come and recognize that there is a problem. And so let's resist making this about ourselves and defending men in this moment. Number four, can we recognize that this problem is about you? Number three, can you recognize that this problem's not about you? Don't make it about yourself, but can we as men recognize that the problem is about us? And so while we mustn't dismiss the courage of the ladies to speak out and to come and inadvertently make it about us, that's the previous point, we must realize that this problem wouldn't exist without us. Can I just let that sink in? Men, this problem wouldn't exist without us. The definition of this problem is violent men violating women. That's what it boils down to. Every incident, 99.9% of violence against women deals with men being violent against women. And so the definition of this problem is men violating women. And so just because you've never physically violated a woman, it doesn't absolve you from guilt. And so you say, how is that possible? How is that possible? Well, let me explain. Do you watch porn? Anyone here watch porn? Okay. So obviously you're not going to raise your hand. But if you watch porn, porn perpetuates a demeaning and objectifying view of women that is the seedbed of violent crimes, especially against women. So if you participate in porn, you're participating in this problem. What about your phone? What's on your phone? If I took your phone now and scrolled through your phone, what would I find there? Maybe it's not porn. Maybe you're not addicted to porn. But what would I find there? And so listen to this. This was shocking for me. This is a post on Facebook. It's going to come on the screen behind me. It says, this afternoon a sweet guy, who often asks me about the things, earnestly popped his head into my office. Hey, you know this men are trash thing? Do you really think all men are trash? I paused, finished typing my mail, took a deep breath, and asked him if I could have a look at his phone. He shifted uncomfortably but obliged, unlocked it, and handed it over. I popped open his WhatsApps, and in moments, I found a rape porn gif that had been shared on a group chat of 20 to 50 other men, men who drop their kids off at my daughter's school, men who are married to my friends, men who employ my friends, men who are buddies with my other male friends. There's not a lot that surprises me when it comes to misogyny, and I expected to find something, but I was floored. Not one of those men had said, whoa, dude, or that's not cool, or anything to that effect. Instead, what followed was a stream of lols and laugh cry emojis and something to the effect of nice lunch break. I handed the phone back, open on the gif, and the guy stood there, aghast, about to say something, and then he got teary, and then I got teary, and we haven't spoken since, and I don't think we will for some time. And so if you're not calling out other men when they treat women as objects of their personal gratification, then you're part of the problem. If your response to a woman being groped, catcalled, or receiving other unwanted sexual attention is that boys will be boys, then you're part of the problem. If you call women sluts for the same behavior which when men engage in it, they're called studs, then you're part of the problem. If you ask what a woman was wearing or why she was drinking or was in a particular place when she was harassed or raped, then you're part of the problem. If you say or do things to women you wouldn't want a large man to say or do to you in prison, you're part of the problem. If you're raising sons and not ensuring they understand that women are equal to men in moral value and legal rights, you're part of the problem. If your expectation is for women to educate you or for women to do the speaking out when they've been trying to do so and getting beaten and killed for their efforts since time immemorial, then you're part of the problem. And so it's not about us, but it is about us. There's a culture that we live in that we inadvertently condone. Number five, can we understand that language matters? There's a picture going to come on the screen now. Won't you look at it? It's a tweet that the government put out, and there's the writing in white is what the government said, and you'll see the language crossed out there and written in red, just adjusted, and it says the same thing in a completely different way. Won't you just read it very quickly? There's a crazy thing in which we come and coach and teach women how not to be raped. Where is the training and the calling and the speaking to the men about not raping and dealing with that? There's something backwards here. And so it's not a gender-based violence issue. It's not violence against women. It's a violence by men issue. This is not women's safety problem. It's a violent men problem. And ultimately, the question to be answered is not how do we keep women safe. That is, of course, good sense to consider for the present moment, but we must be asking, what can we do to stop men raping and acting violently towards women? Language subtly informs where we place our emphasis. Number six, can we appreciate power dynamics? Sexual crimes are the most extreme form of men exerting power over women, but there are more subtle ways in which these damaging power dynamics play out. As men, we should be aware of them because when we contribute to them, we are complicit in normalizing and marginalizing of women. There's a concept called taking up space, which refers to how people dominate conversations and even unwittingly repress the views and opinions of others. And so white males in South Africa typically take up a lot of space. And so when we do so, we silence the voice of others, even if unintentionally so. And so I just want to stop there and say, when we talk about this, we look at the news articles and we look at what's happening in the news, there's a propensity for people to come and say, oh, that's a black or colored thing. No. No, it's not a black or colored thing. It's a white. As I come and say, white male voice takes up a lot of space in this country. Don't come and point our fingers at a different color, at a different ethnic group. No, this is a male issue. I know of many ladies in this community who have been raped and are sexually abused by white men. And it's not an ethnic thing. It's a male thing that we need to understand. And so this plays out in conversations at dinner tables. This plays out in conversations at dinner tables, in dinner parties and corporate boardrooms. As white men, we should become conscious of the space we take up. When we hear things like "men are trash," our first response should be to listen and to try and understand, and not to defend ourselves. This is not an attack on men. We should also be examining ourselves to see if and how unhelpful dynamics play out in our marriages and in our homes. And so we're modeling attitudes and behaviors towards women and towards our sons. And so when there is a difference in opinion, do we raise our voice to exert power? Men, I'm talking to you. Do we raise our voice to exert power? Do we raise our voice to exert power over our wives? If we're using our strength, our physical voice, an expression of rage to subdue our wives, our women, this is a form of violence. If your wife is scared to raise her opinion because you might shut her down, or you might shout at her, or punch the wall, or kick the door, this is a form of oppression. Be brave and ask your wife if she has ever felt like that. I asked Kaz yesterday, I said, have I ever behaved in a way that has made you feel unsafe? And you know what she said? She said yes, to my great shame. Number 7, can we call porn out for the scourge of society that it is? Porn plays a big role in objectifying women and creating the feeling amongst many men that we have the right to women's bodies. If we hold the view that watching porn doesn't actually harm anyone, we're sorely mistaken. Number 8, can we work on our definition of masculinity? And so men are not made in the gym, or they're not made in the gym or measured by how much money they make. Men are not those that keep their tears in and their drinks down. If such things define what men are, then Jesus wasn't much of a man. We need to move our definition of masculinity from where it is today to something that centers around what God has for us. And so Galatians chapter 5, verse 19 says, now the works of the flesh are evident: sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalry, dissension, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like this. These are the hallmarks of those who live in the flesh, and those who live in the flesh set their mind upon the flesh. And those who set their mind upon the flesh cannot please God. You cannot. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such thing there's no law. And in light of what we're reading here, many would come and dismiss that as a very frilly, fluffy, woolly version of masculinity. But what we have in Jesus Christ is someone who with great power came and held it back, served others with love and joy and peace and patience. And so if we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. Men, we're called to come and embody the picture of Christ. That has to be our definition of masculinity. It has to be what we strive for. As men, as men, we have to We have to move our definition of masculinity to one that centers on what we see in Scripture. And what we see in Scripture is one that centers around Christ and His example. And towards that end, I want to call us as men to begin to move that definition. Number 9, can we do the work? Can we do the work? Can we understand that as I'm standing here and sharing these things, it didn't just fall in my head? 2 weeks ago, I wasn't sure what to call it. Gender-based violence, violence against women, sexual abuse, what's the difference? But now I'm informed. Why? Because I've done the work. And I'm going to be more and more and more informed because I've done the work. And so we need to, as men, inform ourselves around this, and you need to engage with it. And I appreciate that it's quarter past and you've stuck around and you're listening because you're engaging with this, you're doing the work, and I want to ask you to continue doing that. Because as you do the work, you're going to come and you're going to formulate what you need to think, what you need to say, how to behave. And some of you will be nervous to come and speak into this or share or say anything. And the reason why you're nervous is because you haven't done the work. But as soon as you start to do the work, you'll begin to have a voice. And as you have a voice, you can do number 9. Can we make a stand? Can we make a stand? Whether it's calling other men out for sexist jokes or raising our voice in support of women, we need to be men who are willing to stick their necks out and risk being unpopular. It's not about being defenders of women. It's about being allies to them, active allies to women. A couple of months ago, I was in the cash and carry here in Strand, and I was standing there sorting something out, and there was a manager standing there, and he came past. There's a lady working on the till, and as he came past, he rubbed his crotch against her bum, and held her like this, and then walked past, making as if the space was tight. And there was massive space for him to get through. And as he walked past, he kind of gave me like a look, you know, like, hey, did you see that? Did you see what I did? And I just shook my head and I said, you're a dog. You know that. And I looked at this woman and I was like, my goodness, that is just unacceptable. And there's a moment that I'm proud that I did something and said something, but there are many, many moments that I look back on my life that I didn't say anything and I didn't do anything, and I'm ashamed of that. But I want to change that from here on out. I want to be more active in this. And so I understand, guys, thank you for your patience. I understand that what we're talking about is systemic and that the solution is long-term. And I understand that there are good men here, but as good men, we still partake in a culture that needs to be changed. And that culture needs to be changed by men who actively engage with it, that are informed and that can come and make the difference and be the difference and show other men what to be and what to do. For those of you that are sitting here today and that you are oppressing your wife, that you are violent to your wife, that are doing anything like that, it is unacceptable. It ends today. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? It ends today. Whatever it is, it ends today. And in light of the route that needs to happen, I understand that my 10 points and my 10 minutes that turned into 25 minutes is insufficient because it's a long journey. We're taking Tuesday night and we're hijacking it and we're saying to all the ladies, please stay at home. We're having a men's meeting. And we're going to double click on this, on these things that I've spoken about, and we're going to begin to address some of it for the long term so that we can be one of these, this an embryonic space in which the culture begins to shift and change, that we can come and be champions of the culture that we want our children to grow up into and to be a part of. And so this coming Tuesday, all the men, if you consider yourself a part of this community, I expect you to be there. Move heaven and earth to make a plan. Get here, come and be a part of it, and we're going to speak into this. We're going to deal with it as a next step, but it's a long journey that we've got to get to, we've got to get through. And so, on that note, I want us to end.